This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Find out where it is.
I'd like to use this meeting, this time, to take out all this accumulation of the last few days into particular senses that you may not have of it. In other words, we, to be logical, which is my own curse, we have two possibilities. Either we can, in effect, continue with this process of statement that each of us has been involved with, and say, beginning with Alan and myself, the first day, giving you a literal sort of across-the-board sense of what the physical act of writing was for us, and then taking that into more particular, more sensitive ways of feeling about it. Then with the next of Robert's giving you the context of writing as it involves people beyond their particular senses of their own use, and then the discussion last time. But you see, what's going to happen, we're getting a split. In other words, what's happening in the classes becomes, frankly, more and more interesting. What's happening in these morning sessions becomes more and more, to myself, uninteresting, and that we're separating. We ought to get closer now, literally closer to the terms that, or to the senses that are involving you, and literally the senses that are involving us in this relation with you. So I'd like to literally put it up to you. There's no threat or aggression, but I want to know what is occurring to you. What things are coming now into your own minds as context or senses of this? Anybody? I've got a demand, in fact, to someone begin with something that's coming out of all this. Literally, does everyone understand?
No. Does anybody?
What is this word?
No, not at all.
No,
I think it was a spell out, wasn't it, from pre-morning.
You were saying the last time about the thing of the historical I am now, that it's production.
Yeah. I had this sense that I am. And Alan was emphasizing in the first meeting that in this poem of Charles, is this, I come back to the geography of it, that it, there's an instant, not an instant, there's a point in that poem where there is the statement, I am. And this is not a psychological assertion, it's a presence. It is not confined by any external interpretation, let's say. It's not because the doctor tells you. It's not Descartes, I think, therefore I am, where the whole context of being is lodged in some instance of a mental activity. There's an assertion that states I am in this context of Polis's eyes. What does polis mean? Anybody want to help with that? What does the word polis mean, literally?
I mean, town.
Town. Well, that's not leaf, yeah. Huh?
Sure do. Sure do. Jeremiah, what is town bar organization? What? You mean
it's
actually?
In other words, he says that there is no such many as the master, only eyes and all heads to be looked out of. I mean, what?
There are no categories.
There are no,
no hierarchy. No such many as master. Yeah. Only eyes to be looked out of.
And all heads.
Now.
What? No. Oh, do you want me to do that now?
No,
sorry. We'll get to that. Yeah. Because really, we have the primary ground for me seems where am I? What context for reality can I gain? Literally, what ground can I find under my feet? And that's why I think that I go back to this. And I'm curious to know where you are, literally. Where are we? But we, you see, that I go back equally to the plural of I is a false value, unless it's realized in something other than a species collectivity of persons with literally with no active principle to join them, even if it's just join in prayer or any kind of premise of the...
Are you talking about society, or are you talking about this blast of
belief? I don't understand society anymore.
But in the polis business, the other eye, the relation to the polis has something. How much have you seen of the town? You only see the town you live in, is only the town you've seen, and if you were to sit down to draw it, or to make it seen, like that really good word, one good word was dig and another really good word was scene, or making a scene. Now, then what is that scene? And finally, that's the only polis you've got is the one you actually have seen. And when the town was entire, the responsibility of the eye was really to know that town from the moment, from its sleeping, its waking up, how the food got there, all the processes. Today, many of those processes are completely hidden. You almost have to be a detective to find some of the processes in the towns we live in. And Maximus, most people feel that it's indecent if Olson to look at Gloucester, like lifting his skirt and saying, "Mama, you know, I mean, look at the little boys and see what Mama looks like," and play doctor. It's a playing doctor to a town today. I mean, it's not just Mama and her skirts. The town's got skirts over everything that goes on, and then it went on. But that polis is really what you do see. Now, and what you hear in the town is something else. That's everybody talking in the town square. It's been called gossip, and it's been and the big gossip is the mythos of what the people say. But the eyes are the thing about what you know about the town. I think that's the they try to sell them. The commodity politics today is like all the rest of the commodities. It's something we have not engaged in sufficiently, so that it's given us and haven't looked at.
Ed Dorn has a poem.
Looked at the thing that's really going on. We're asked to worry about what's going on in China because to see it on TV when actually our business is what's going on in this room where we're looking. And we're asked always, what do you think about Russia? Or aren't you friendly to the Russians? But we'd all admit that it's a little different question about are we friendly in this room or kind? I am a person with very strong kind and unkind feelings. I mean, I know we're not supposed to be unkind, but I'm not being raised a Christian. I have very strong, marked unkind feelings. Yes, you are. But that eyes. And the things you see, you don't have unkind feelings about something or kind feelings about something that's off or you don't see.
We're talking about correspondences, the senses of things coming together as senses of consciousness. And I was thinking Zukovsky has just published a book in which he says eyes like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember what he does here, but it's...
Yeah. And he puts it in parentheses, second eye.
Pronounced eye, that's right.
But now Alan, who's a world banner, pan man, has to go all around the world to see. You have to go and see. He didn't sit here and have feelings about India, but he's perfectly capable of, but he also has to go and see, and wants to go to see Russia, because no poet can be satisfied with these vague feelings. When they're really there, you've got to go and put those eyes where you see the way it was.
Yeah. More possible than
what before. All your scenes.
My eye can see everything now. I can see the North Pole, and I can see India, and I can see Ocean's Bald Head.
Yeah, is it possible to see the world?
Yeah, what's the deal? What was you had to say, sir?
But that's already tricky, because he's interpreting what he puts as his premises. Anticipate your reality. You know the disappointment, for example, of going anywhere and saying, I'm not going to like it, and you arrive. You've made an assumption about what's going to be there, but there is no future of this order, ever. So the proposals of this kind sit among the vagaries of any assumption. And this to find out for yourself, I mean, the senses of knowing which is a verb, to know, to find out for yourself, are much more interesting than any, quote, interpretation or even analysis that follows. If you see the thing, that's the primary act of life. I mean, that you're, as he would say, engaged, but not as anything more than that. In other words, where I part with the people of Sartre's nature is that they literally weave a web of analysis and assumption upon the occasion before they've had the actual fact of it. Now, why Herodotus and why also Pausanias are relevant to this sense of knowledge is simply that Herodotus literally wrote down all that he heard. Beautiful sections on the source of the Nile, where he gives you all that he could hear, all that people could tell him about the source of the Nile. Or Pausanias, who literally walked from town to town, recording as he came in what he saw, going to whatever was pointed out to him as significant in the town's activity, shrines or any kind of local business of particular order, where he didn't. And then you see Thucydides is again thinking of Thucydides as a false value. Simply that Thucydides put an analysis upon the events of life prior to their occurrence. So he simply wanted things to be categorized. That's the impatience, you see, with the discipline that has more or less dictated senses of human information ever since Aristotle, this categorization of human life before it occurs, which makes us all grow up into molds or into forms that have become less and less possible to live in.
The great simple example going on now in Vietnam, and the reporting of Vietnam. Most areas where there is a Cold War conflict, most of the reporters are making their news stories out of what is handed to them by either the USIS or the US State Department or else the Russian information services. In Vietnam, however, most of the reporters have been so betrayed by all of them that now they're going to send out their not depend on government handouts for their stories. Not depend on sitting in their office, but actually having to go out into the street, talk to the Buddhists, talk to the local intellectuals, and make up their own stories out of what they see directly and contact directly by the world, rather than getting it through secondary sources. Well, apparently, all these quoted there also about 27 to 28 is the first big story, the honest 35 to 40. So that they have more typical energy to go out walking the streets. Which makes an enormous difference. That's why the reporters in Vietnam is much more explosive than any other part of the world right at the moment. Because all the reporters are 25 years old, physically 25, so that means that they can get out and contact people, walk around like if a Buddhist is going to burn himself, they like they got a Buddhist friend who told them to come down and see it. They are physically capable of actually going out and doing it. That's why we have photographs of it in the newspaper. Which you don't have in any other, right now, in any other news story anywhere in the world that's coming from the mainstream network. You don't have anything quite as hot, at least for the American newspapers. You don't have anything quite as hot and quite as threatening to the American psyche as what's happening in Vietnam, or anything.
Take a local instance. For example, Alan has, quote, public fame. Well, how many, and people say, try to get in touch with him by calling him up on the telephone. But it, you know, why doesn't it occur to them that they want to see something that they come and look at? Literally. He says, you know, like, why don't you come to here? You know, why don't you come here? If you're interested in myself as subject, why not come and look? And this, curiously, doesn't... I don't say it ironically, I just say it... What do you mean it doesn't always work? You can take a look. It doesn't... there are moments when you must, in effect, trust yourself to an agency that you don't... that you literally don't understand. When you go to the doctor and say you need an operation or something, you put your involved in an agency that is beyond your, you know.
Bob, I think there is something here. Eyes would rightly, let's say, if you really look at Ginsberg, this fame disappears because it's mythos, and we find ourselves looking in the sense that anybody looks at a body.
Yeah.
In which case, you see a great deal indeed. I mean, and you no longer are, you're not seeing... Well, all right, your first most perilous sight is to try to substantiate your picture of a personality. But a doctor doesn't see a personality when he looks at this. He sees, well, this living organism the way it is. This is what, this is what your idea, your attitudes just disappear. The fame, which is a persona of the mythos, disappears, and you're looking at the living fact that the body is like this, and you can begin to see. You can even be, even amateurishly, you can begin to get an impression of breathing and blood tone and a whole series of things that suddenly give you the idea of what this is like as a physical organism. And you have to do that in order to get along yourself, because you're another organism and you've got to know what kind of speeds go on and between these two. And your eyes are doing that all the time without your registering it.
Yeah, and what strikes me is the most important thing about direct contact is it's the only place where you can get the actual life, which is not ideas, and not just in general, but feeling going back and forth. You can't get feeling from television set, really.
You can't.
If you're getting a news story on television, or if you're just somebody talking to you, there's a mechanical interposition of all those electronic machines that's in the way of the direct feeling from belly to belly.
Literally, yeah. You can watch anything.
What happens is that the whole world is gone into the head, or like Whitney said, man is lost in the wilderness of his own head. Whereas we live not in our head alone, we live in our bodies, and our bodies like have a whole, not a different sensation, either. It's a feeling which everybody knows. Well, most of modern culture is operated on the level of idea, or head, or symbol, or language, or even a sensation of substitute nature, but the actual direct contact feeling, which is the only way that we know what is going on with somebody else and in ourselves, is completely lost for the most part. And that's what I was complaining about the first day when I was talking about the FYI, the girl there, and I had some feeling together, but that feeling by the time it came out in the audience wasn't there. There was no feeling, it didn't feel like me, it didn't appear. So what kind of politics can you run if you've absolutely no feeling going on? Well, you then get completely abstract things that can go in any direction according to where the ideas structure goes. You have a number of alternative possible universes, one that actually exists, which is I am here with shyness and with Brahms. And you are here when with your shyness and your throb, and you're going to get our throbs together. That's how society is made. Society is not made by putting machines one on top of another.
Yeah. They got sleep machines and dream machines.
Feeling aids. They got feeling aids.
They got machines and eventually drugs that will substitute for feelings, will substitute visionary sensations and
we don't have to have imagination.
I wasn't feeling it. That's why I was dealing with the person with feeling.
Go there and start saying, you know, like, because that's India. I think anybody going to India is going to think like a walk.
I wasn't dealing with Esquire, I was dealing with a girl who came to see me. That's the whole point. You can't shut her up.
Why the hell did they send a nice young girl?
If you start shutting your door, then you
can't shut your door saying that you are driven by an unfeeling machine, therefore I will shut you out.
I don't know. I
learned
a lesson about shutting doors.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
I
don't know. Oh, my baby, hit my cup. Oh, my doors are open.
He did keep his eyes open.
He did not.
I was not dealing with Esquire. I was dealing with a living being in front of me.
Yeah, well, see what happens.
All right, let's take another chance.
That's another area. One can't control, you know.
You can't correct what's real. You can't correct.
You don't even relate to what's directly in front of you.
How many doors are you going to keep open? I mean, that gets pretty hot. Like, all my doors are open. I get pretty hot. We're
right. So, in Maximus, presumably, Senor Olsen is keeping his feelings personal related to what is actually going on around him in the street and what he can find out with his own eyes in the local library full of dusty books with him. We know that he wrote 100 or 200 years ago. He can go talk to the figures. He can go to look at the mayor walking down the street with his hat. Then he can compose out of that what of the little direct epiphanies that he has felt. He can compose new personal history of what is happening there now to him, the only person he's and feelings he's getting out of the scene in front of him.
All right, now if I were to explain that
being forward
and bring melody into the planet, I can say
let's get off, I think, because we got that clear enough. But I do think there's something here, since I'm sort of a closed door man, and I was really very, very, I've spent some time being puzzled by the no hierarchies, because I was making fancy hierarchies in my mind all the time. But if you go back to this polis, it only, when it existed and where it exists, there are personal forces, but there are no hierarchies within the polis. It disappears when the hierarchies appear, when the castes and the thing that's called society, all that thing that's talked about as a society, which is a pattern with hierarchies and ups and downs and overs, and we've got classes here and things, is the disappearance of this people with eyes and people meeting in the context in which they can all look, talk, have their own judgment. And I realized, actually, then there are no hierarchies. There are individual occasions, and we all miss it when... you, in a funny way, you're making a... You're mistaking... John, is that right? Then your name. Because my reaction to that Esquire thing was at least notably different from yours. I asked Alan, how can you get interviewed by Esquire, have it all be so much baloney, and one can still feel the spirit through in it? I mean, how come this, how can it be? And then he told me this girl who interviewed him actually really didn't get to write the article because she got sick. So on top of my question, how can a girl interview you, go back and not write the article, and somebody who didn't write it, and you still have some define, this is a puzzle to me because in my own world, the occasions in which I find myself coming, in which I can see myself happening, are few, and he certainly don't consist of getting all the way through Esquire alive. I mean, and as a consequence, I don't get to Esquire. I mean, nobody, and all my life, I won't have to worry about that because it couldn't possibly happen. Esquire's smart. They can get something. They can go to Ginsburg and have something happen. If they know that if they went to B, everything shut up and there wouldn't be anybody there except a big bore. Yeah, and I don't even give Christmas presents.
Well, that's the process. In other words, unless you're going to give people access to your own life in the way that you wish it from others, then how can you make a, where can you draw the line? In other words, if this particular woman, no matter what she represents, I remember, for example, here's another instance which is quite different but comes to the same position. In this place in Guatemala where I was living, it happened that the administrator, this thinker, was an ex-Nazi. I mean, he's a stormtrooper. Now, what am I going to do? In other words, am I going to sit in the history of the general society from which I've come, or am I going to look at this man as another man? It happened by coincidence that he and I were driving a truck which struck an old Indian man who was deaf and didn't hear us coming. Suddenly, we're both present in something that's as actual as anything ever is. And the man was killed. Now, what? Are we going to sit there in the division of ourselves with myself feeling this is an ex-Nazi I'm with? And he speaks of Texas. He says I was in a concentration camp in Texas during the war, and he spoke of the difficulties. How are we to arbitrate experience except by standing witness to it? And Alan, you can't say I don't like Esquire, therefore I will not admit that it exists. Or rather, exclude the possibility of a person, no matter how they are present.
The thing that was going on in Iceland was the same thing.
Yeah, what a categorization
that was. They were seeing Iceland as an abstraction.
A person, not, yeah, and they, as a matter of fact, they were approaching Eichmann the same way Hitler had approached Jews,
exactly.
with an idea of what it was he was looking at and no eyes. Hitler's a person remarkably with no eyes and shows how much force you can have in history if you literally don't yield at all to the eyes. I mean, if you're going to yield to the eyes at all, you better have to do with them. I think that's the other part of the story, because you could certainly... It had been over and over and over again evidence that if you don't even look at all, and you don't, and boy, did anybody hit Polis right in the middle. It was something like Hitler, as it's happened at times in history. We know that. We call him madman or something, but it really is a terrific force because it's closed and goes.
It was chessmen, because everybody was looking, or the legislators, or whoever was responsible, was looking at him through the eyeglasses of categories and of hierarchies. Nobody saw Chessmen, well, many people did, but people who were responsible to Chessmen directly, and so the people were killing him. I mean, everybody,
the
there's this category of society, all in the lawbreaker, there's this category of hierarchies of murder, and by abstract thought, everything has to be applied and which has to be pulled. But obviously, a direct contact Chessmen was obviously giving out with not being received.
Yeah, but by the very stretch of the road band of light, nobody was perhaps receiving the poems that were written in New York, both against the execution, 5 years of Eichmann, and people who, you know, like you might say, had some connection with or involved around the center of civil craftsmen that could very well be seen from the light of Chessmen. And,
but
no, I think
let's take this. I'd like to get something about the Eichmann thing, because Denise Levertov did write an Eichmann poem and really got into a mess on it. It's where your feelings located. Now, And this is a different picture, I think. It isn't different from Alan's picture, because as I pointed out, Alan does go to look at the thing that he feels he has a response to. But the other thing that often happens is you think you have a response to Eichmann. You ought to know, if you haven't seen him, that you got that your response must come from something you did see. I mean, just not the Freudian. I mean, Freud at least gave you this key, that when you get upset about something and you find yourself dealing with abstractions, you know then that you really are upset about something, and the thing you saw goes back. Now we said a couple of sessions ago that the thing you saw can very well go back to something known that you'll be very surprised, because it isn't within that section you call your life, it's way back there. But it also can go, then you have to find the event. When you write a poem, you think you want to write a poem about Eichmann, and you find it really just suddenly you're mouthing sentiments, and that's not, and you can tell right away, because it's not equivalent to the sense of injustice you have, or justice, or the sense of humanity of looking at the man. Then you've got to find the man that Eichmann was just standing like a dream image for, and look at him finally. No, I think it's a real person. No, that's where it's different. I think you'll find the time you saw it, and it will be in this. Well, because the kind of event that you see when someone is, I don't identify with somebody. Since in the first place, I don't play cops and robbers. I don't identify with somebody who clubs other people over the head in the name of the law, who breaks the law. I'm interested in the law, and besides, I know that the law can be wrong, so there's a law. Because you know the law is unjust, you know there's how what did that mean? But I'm back not to that. I'm not back. I'm back to why, if you're disturbed about something, and that was the political question we called today, because it's been a big screen, and yet every once in a while you have true political, and they have to go back to what you saw. There are polis as
I don't I was in Israel, but I didn't think much of Eichmann one way or the other. It was not until a couple of days ago I suddenly saw it. Last week I was listening.
But you mean you actually saw it?
Yes.
Well, then, all right. Then you saw it. And where are you seeing?
I was in a state of.
Well, that'll work, yeah.
Last week, which was a new point where I was contacting myself and contacting other people. So in other words, I didn't get disturbed about it. It's not disturbed. What it was I suddenly felt good about action. Felt good toward action for the first time.
No. Yeah. Wait, no. Alan has a statement somewhere that he says the mind is shapely.
Mind is shapely.
In other words, the
mind is shapely.
Yeah.
The mind is running right. The mind is with itself. Then the art is produced with the shapely.
Yeah. What we're trying to do is think of all this context as something other than an issue of obvious categorization. Again, I feel at times a kind of frustration, both for my own needs or terms of ways of feeling, because I find them appropriated or put into forms before they can occur. In other words, even the word poem, you see, I think partly my own frustration with this kind of category is that I don't want to be anticipated so continually. I think Williams's frustration, let's say, at something like the sonic form, I mean, in one sense, obviously, he wasn't fighting against simply the arrangement of lines or, you know, something beats or whatever. It's the whole premise of the organization of an occasion before you've even arrived. Yeah. The frustration of going to a dance where they're going to dance with the foxtrot or the samba, and I don't know how to do that. I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. I think that one must, in effect, take an aspect of responsibility for what he proposes in this way. But if he doesn't allow himself to be corrected by the actual terms of his feeling, then, of course, he's making a bad mistake. Or not, well, nobody's... Again, Alan is useful. Everybody's right. You cannot... But if you... Yeah? I question that poems are external forms, or that they have external forms. Stephen somewhere says that these discussions of form and poetry, I don't know if he says they bore... Yeah, I think he says they bore him. If they are thinking of form as some some sense of plastic shape, which too often form and discussions of poetry come to as a proposition, that the form of a poem is fire. I use Blake. The fire delights in its form. That, to me, is the aspect of the poetry that is most interesting. And if you can figure that one out as a category, great, go to it. If you can anticipate form in that sense. But I've never seen anyone who's been able to do it.
It was William Hawkins.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel
the fire would light on its own accord.
You see,
without any more categories, without any more hierarchizations of what form will be.
Well, Robert says we have come so far that all the old stories echo once more.
Whisper
once more. Excuse me. In other words, I've taken the assumptions of my intentions, let's say, as far as they are useful for points of ways of getting off the ground or getting myself moving. All the ways of beating myself or even inviting myself to speak in some way that I can live with. I find myself bankrupt in the sense that I no longer know, in any intentional sense, what I either am doing or can do. Bankrupt in the sense for myself of having lost an interest or any use, any actual interest that I can move on as a use of that interest with the senses of writing as they have been formalized. In other words, you should see me, so to speak, in a class, a teaching class in survey of English literature, and I was going to read these things that we were assigned by the course form. And I got completely lost in terms of, I'd lost all relation to, all, not even interest, I'd lost all understanding of the way they had been thought of. In other words, the notes that preceded the sections in the image. And I would find myself in front of a class of 50 or 60 people just saying, why can't we read this? I mean, what is the hierarchies that were asserted? This was not, you know, let's arbitrarily break down the sense of formal organization, but it no longer seemed to me pertinent in the context in which you would read it. That is an analysis of King Lear, let's say, as an event, which wants to relate it to external senses of form, as they have discussed or proposed in English courses, seemed to me a mockery of the actual event that was possible. And I don't know, I became very, beyond the sense of psychological, beyond the sense of argument, I was given basic senses that two people can't sit in the same seat at the same time. I mean, that we occupy space in the real sense, and that we possibly occupy time in a real sense. Well, say that's your own experience. Now, you grew up in the West Indies, and you lived in a split culture, in the sense that you had the immediate culture of the people around you. Then you had the personal culture, let's say the family culture of your own family. And then I know you've shifted since that from place to place. You've just come from Sandpoint, Alaska. Now, the point is, if we're to organize you as a category, I mean, you don't exist, you see. And that's not true because you're there. How are you there, you see? How can you be all this and be there? Well, if we're going to deal with you as a category, we can't allow you to vote or do anything else. But there is a much more real way that seems to me that you do exist, a much more interesting one. And that's what I'm actually interested in.
To what? Well, I didn't have any preconception of farming. I called them sonnets because I really liked the idea that there'd be sonnets, but they don't. I mean, like, one of them might have. I sat around and said, could I possibly have done? And then I couldn't remember whether it's 14 or 16 or 20 lines it's supposed to have. And I can't, decently, the number of lines has already disappeared in my head, and I know that it's either 10 syllables or 5 stresses, and I certainly didn't have that in there. I just sort of, they felt like sonnets to me, which sonnets don't. Oh, I was talking last night to David Schaff about a sonnet that he showed me that had the other thing. And I realized that I'd always felt about sonnets. I don't have Williams, like, it's just awful. But the last guy I saw at all who could write a good sonnet was Yeats. And that was because actually there's some freedom of movement in it. But most sonnets look like they've been, like, people stuffed everything in little tiny suitcases in a row, 5 little suitcases to a line, and you stuff things in like this. It was so tight. So I knew that the sonnet had a kind of a feeling in the ones that I'd read, and it was open and it flowed along like this. And then the other thing they told you about how you make a proposition and then you answer and then you, that didn't seem to me what had happened in sonnets I ever saw that I liked. Luckily I didn't take English, so I probably didn't get all this straightened out in my head, but I remember in freshman classes it was very puzzling. They'd ask you, now explain how Shakespeare conforms to my idea of the sonnet, says the professor, and of course Shakespeare doesn't, and you don't, and everybody doesn't, and you sit down there and say, well now the first section of this poem is the proposition, you look, and they said the second section of the poem must be the, what was it, the poem squad. Well, but at the same time, since I have read some sonnets, I think I've read about 6 of them in my life or something. Out of all the ones you look at or something, that came, I had a feeling of what it was like, and that was what I was doing in those sonnets. So
the impression I got from listening to Robert's reading was that Robert was sufficiently himself so that any external form he filled up, he would fill up.
Well, and I felt that the sonnet was a very personal form, which I usually don't. Yeah.
Was not in any way determined on who he was when he was writing it, what he was putting into it, or that it was completely agreed what he put into it.
It would be a response to a
poem. So that in a way he was writing in a sonnet form to destroy any identification of himself as someone who hates sonnets.
Yeah.
Any fixed conception of himself.
I mean, there's no law that says you can't respond. Take the shape of the chair, the fact of the chair. There's no law, obviously, that says you can't respond to that shape if it involves you and your feeling, if your feelings are involved by it, and you can make another chair. It's simply when you make an arbitrary chair without that occasion of the response or the premise of the feeling. In other words, if you don't want to make chairs, why make them, you see? If you don't find an occasion for this character of response, why assume it for such arbitrary purposes as to write a quote poem unquote?
Well, our American language is much more evidently much more open and flowing than language was in periods when they were writing sonnets. I mean, the fact that everything looks that packed in, I'm not just talking about inept sonnets, but well, I got the bird. But
Hawkins. He who kisses the joy of the fly, lives in eternity sunrise. He who binds to the yourself a joy just the way you'd like to.
So, bind that delight. Find out what happens. Yeah. That you're in a bind, baby.
I am bankrupt in the sense that, like, everything I thought I was, I am not. And everything I think I am now, I am not. But everything I felt I was last week, I really was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like you were. That's Brad. You're a whitehead boy. But I do think that
specifically bankrupt. I mean, you know, in a lot of little petty ways, like here I am here, and I'm supposed to come back, or would like, according to my vision of myself, come back triumphant with a great and white towel. Somebody else wants me to do that. So I feel that I've got to do that, but I haven't done that. So now what am I supposed to do? Except here I am. You know? Yeah, and it was like, I got to start molding as well. I don't want to live up to that. I don't want to have to live in an inorganic way, unlike what I am, and satisfy somebody else's, or even satisfy my, I don't want to even have to satisfy my own expectations. I want to be free of all that.
I think there's one other thing.
I did not satisfy my own expectations that day, bankrupt.
But if you, when you are in this bankruptcy, then that is your business. That's the other part of it. I mean, to discover what you're in is the very beginning of anything that happens in writing. For instance, you could have a habit of being bankrupt, but that's not what's happened. And you've got to find out, it's just as rewarding, what, is reward even the word? It's the business to find out that it, and to recognize that things are stopped, because you could, by habit, go on when they're stopped. You've got to have that quickness to see that they've stopped so that you don't go on and not discover what it is you're in. And I think that's why rightly this thing started with Ginsberg. You were haunted by Kaddish or something. Well, I meant by haunted by the Ginsberg and the things he's realized, and Bob haunted by the things he's realized in this novel he's just finished. But look, I have finished this, then there's something about I'm finished. I mean, and we've got another expression, I'm finished, I'm done for, I'm finished. And both of those are in, both of, that acts that way because it really does. And if you can get that sense yourself, every realization is really, every delight has this thing, I'm finished, and then another thing. So that he's presenting you also with something that could be called the hardness and the resistance is like a kernel. I'll just throw the tree out in the kernel and seed. I'm always in it.
Born again. Be born again. Be born again.
This sense, the doors, the river, then something that literally exhausts you, so exhausts your resources, in the sense all that you recognize is possibility for yourself has been exhausted, and so that, you have the sensation the poem of Robert Stevenage poem, I'm barely able to go on.
That's from what
you've already used. But the point is, it's simply the state of feeling, of being, where you can't see anywhere where to go, and you can't see anything that you can think of as a possibility for yourself. You're finished. I mean, you finished with...
Yeah, but that's from what you've already mentioned. I mean...
I know. Well, that's... Yeah, I see what you're... Yeah, quite. But the... It's a state that's...
The problem is to get to the state there are no frequencies of like the idea of who you are and what you are. For me, I think the problem is to get to the state where there's nothing but feeling.
This involves opening doors.
But it's... Yeah.
I mean, if we start closing up behind you...
I don't think we're doing it consciously.
Yeah, no, no, but he means, I see what you mean. If the doors are to be open to get that restoring thing, actually, what Alan is also suffering from is he wants to close a door on Howell when Howell's in his boot. No, but I meant, but you were putting down that shadow, that thing that people expect Howell to happen again.
That's what I'm trying to explain.
Yeah.
The will.
This viable. I remember Charles once said, "If we are in a situation." situation that allows our will an extraordinary play. In other words, we sit in a middle state where we can, I don't remember accurately, but not intuit, but we have a sense of our life that's can be extraordinarily, quote, illuminating, or can give us a sense of thought, a possibility. Yeah. And if we make our will the arbiter of that sense of possibility, we muddle, or we will destroy all that possibility is. And I think that I find myself, for example, wanting to relax that sense of will so that I don't, really, so I don't destroy my, I don't want to kill myself in some arbitrary act of intention, you know. So that's why, again, I feel myself bankrupt, because I've come to the end of an occasion, for the moment. I mean, I trust things. You can only do that. When you're riding on a train, you've got to trust the man who's like, driving it. Or when you're living, you've got to trust the act of life. It sounds awfully sentimental, but I don't know how else to characterize it. This is with all possible consciousness. It doesn't mean you have to be dumb.
John?
Oh, yes, it has. To be in the writing, that is when one is literally involved in the act of writing. There may be particular difficulties, but as long as that state is that the state one is in, that takes care of itself. I mean, with all the particular difficulties that occur in it. But when you come to the end of it, in other words, when you come to the end of that possibility, you're finished in the sense that you may or may not have dealt with what was given you, but there is a hiatus or a gap that it feels very uncomfortable. I mean, it just doesn't feel right. So you make up your life with specious activities filling in the. I think most people, or most friends I've had who are writers, are very conscious of the intervals of disorder between pieces of work, where there is no use in themselves that is interesting to themselves. And my sense now, as Alan was saying, apropos bankrupt, is the particular possibilities I've felt, I for the moment no longer really feel. In other words, I've written a kind of poem that's led me to whatever, instances of it. But
I wasn't talking just about
poetry. No, I know you weren't, but the whole time.
No, because I was Dirac has recently had an article in relation to physics, and he said, what the gains we have in our century in physics cannot possibly be the answer to the questions we know one thing, and that is that the questions that lie before us, what we don't know, can't possibly have anything to do with what we do, because that's where we've gotten misled and gotten to the place where we can't see. And physics has a feeling also of being exhausted, as if it had gotten a picture that goes way out there, yes, but then all of a sudden meets with something that happened where, and then he said, so we know that the physics of the next period, 20 years now, is going to be entirely different, and we'll throw everything we've got out. I mean, it'll all look as different as it's out in the sense that the perspective will be different. I certainly do. Yeah, sure. But for instance, I don't have the bankruptcy in relation to bankruptcy. Now, Bob wants to, and this I think is a thing about the person. No, but I think this is what, for instance, I really always am contriving and so far almost managing to go on really without changing or developing in myself. Now, Bob wants to force himself to a place where something will happen in an entire new, because he really does want to make it impossible for those earlier poems to happen. Whereas I really just want to make it possible for me to go on. Like, I remember at an anarchist meeting, and Paul Goodman had just lectured about the expansive, all orgasmic sexual, and I said, my goodness, my mother disapproved of my sexual impulses, and now I come to anarchism, and it wants me to be a whole, generous, kindly, or Ginsberg wants me to be an expansive, touch me. Well, all I wanted from the beginning was to be cross, old me, and get by with it, and not be spanked or scolded and told I ought to be expansive. I knew if I were expansive and loving and kind and good, and but however, if it happened, a conversion, Charles Maximus is trying to force a conversion within Charles, make it untenable, really, for Charles, there's magic, all sorts of magic contrivances in Maximus, to force Charles Olson. Maximus is big and Charles Olson is a little tiny man down there, you don't realize, my baby. And he wants to make it impossible for Charles Olson to go on. Well, at times it sounds like he wants to make it impossible for us to go on. And Derek gets angry and says, why do I have to do that? I said, well, no, just wake up to it. He was getting into awful grouch and he was thinking, Charles Olson's the most terrible, awful thing that ever happened to poetry. This is some years ago. I went out and I said, you know, you don't have to be concerned about history. He said, I don't. And he beamed. I said,
Carol was ahead of me. It was a bad
Well, I try to find the form. The hardest thing is to find the form in which writing can attack this thing. That's, I think, the most difficult.
On the one hand, the more one learns about writing as a craft, the more at times at least you want to take over. You know, you want to really take it over. And this, you want to write, and you want to create the whole language and write the whole world. You know. But when that state occurs, you see, to my own sense, when I personally feel it, then I get awfully, then I hate it. I hate that. In many senses, I don't want the aggression of writing the world in that way, I don't want the vanity of it. Although I do want it, you see. I mean, it gets awfully corrosive. And then when I break, so to speak, whatever the ego business is, when I can't, I go dense with all those confusions of why can't I do it, you know? Why can't I write a poem today? All the invitations to write that occur that are not valid, let's say. And then the impatience with all the sense of life that I'm aware of, which is specious, which is an ego. I don't know how to call it. Language, you see, becomes itself. I can't even trust words. And I can't trust my senses of life. I'm simply, my children then are more, much more interesting than me.
Yeah.
You see, any kind of the proposal of this order of species, you don't, the thing, that's what I'm trying, that's what I personally now am trying to bring to some kind of realization, that you do not write what you think you are writing. I mean, this is not a kind of thing, you don't know what you're doing. In one sense, you do know what you're doing, but the point is you can't lead anything to, you cannot take life by the nose, however vague that may sound, and lead it to particular conclusions or attitudes. You cannot do this. I mean, yeah.
Did I use contrivance? Well, I mean, I have contrived, but you mean, do you mean a contrivance in relation to how to use this feeling of being stopped? Well, for one thing, if you are stopped, certainly that means you're going to have to learn to write forms that will stop. I mean, you're going to have to talk so it will stop, so that it will at least not go on, that your word speciously there works, so that you won't find yourself being being capable where you really aren't. I mean, because when we've been talking here, something else entered my mind. Why is it we do not, why is it that at a certain time, and it must be our life intuition that does this, by the way, because the minute we want to reverse it, we can. Why is it that we close ourselves off from the resources that, for me, for instance, they always lie upon calling upon powers, calling upon the earth itself, calling upon stars. The poets have at call great powers, and they have it. Now we're in, and you will find them always in poems. You'll find them in the poems of the stoppage, but it may be you cannot find the right one. This is, it certainly reminded me of your story of the, if we pose now the Creeley, because one thing in the novel I said, it tells us what it's like to be a Creeley. if you reimagine the writer, and Bob has used himself as an example, to being the person in the adventure of a fairy tale, which is the story of which, it isn't just a story, because there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, stories of what it's like to go through certain configurations in life, they all come to these stoppages. So that if we were to pose this is, that's where, Jamie, it won't work exactly, all of us are suffering from it at the present time, so we know there's some big thing that is at a stoppage, but it also is like a single person moving through a fairy tale and having said the wrong thing to someone that's really quite forgotten back there. And here I am using that someone you're going to see in the past, but always in the fairy tale you've done a wrong thing, but then you don't go back and redo that back there. That makes an adventure. And you come to a stoppage, and then you have certain ways you've got to behave in that stoppage. Fairy tales do tell you a lot about the behavior. You really do have to open the eyes, listen. The one who gets into trouble in fairy tales is always, that's what I think of as obedience, my term obedience. Is when you don't know what to do, you've got to obey. You're in an obedience now. And if he were not to obey, he could just have his powers. All he has to do is reverse tracks and use a power that's no longer appropriate, not obey the situation, and Creeley could go on making Creeley poems. That's a learned ability. And in fact, you can make Creeley poems. That's the awful thing that happens. You're not in his fairy tale at all. You can make Creeley poems. And he's in the same situation you are. He can make Creeley poems. But the obedience is closed on him, and so he has to be in the bucket, rightly in the bucket. But sure. then what I wonder is, what do you call, what comes? Now, actually, you have to walk.